Bill Manning is president of Toronto FC and the Toronto Argonauts. He's one of the men who had to make a call on this difficult decision. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Bill, thanks so much for joining us ahead of tonight's match. I want to talk about the match. I also want to get your thoughts on Alphonso Davies and his move to imminent move to Bayern Munich. But I just want to ask you about, you know, the reaction to what you guys are doing with the supporters groups. You know, how have you gone about, or have you gone about trying to smooth over relationships with these groups, or have they handled it pretty well themselves and kind of understood that this is something you've had to do?
Yes. First off, thanks for having me on, Jeff. Appreciate it. I think in this case, for the most part, feedback we've received has actually been very positive. I think there was almost to a T, members of all the supporters groups took a step back and said, you know, holy cow, what just happened? Mm-hmm. And I think there was some embarrassment and, you know, this sense of, hey, that's not who we are. That went over the line. And I think there was a realization that we had to do something. And so there's actually an ongoing police investigation into this. And you know, there was cameras there that documented a lot of it, you know, from the stadium. And you know, the folks that run the Out of Fury and the Red Blacks are very engaged with Ottawa police. And so, you know, we had to make a stand, and I think it was well received. We since have rescinded the supporter privileges for three groups, mm-hmm. who were not there at all in Ottawa. There's still another three groups that had members there that are kind of part of that investigation that we're still going through. So there were three groups that we didn't find any involvement at all that we've now since rescinded.
So the three groups that are currently part of the investigation are the groups that have had their rights rescinded. What are, you know, somebody asked me this. It's a hell of a good question, Bill. What are their rights?
You know, so it's interesting. So they can do things that the normal fan can't do, right? So you can't stand up in on the west side and have a flag and wave it the whole time or have smoke, you know, and mm-hmm. they have what's called a capo stand, where a guy is literally in front of the stand and he's on his feet and he's organizing the chants. And so, you know, you kind of have these different things that lend to the atmosphere, and it is a fantastic atmosphere that they bring to the game. And I think that's, you know, I have so many people, you know, they say, hey, I love those guys in the South, but, you know, I don't want to sit with them, but I love them, and I think it's part of the atmosphere, and so that's why our relations with them is very, very important, and we try to have an open relationship, and I think for the most part it's a good relationship that we've developed with the different groups. And we've just, you know, like I said earlier, we kind of had a case here in Ottawa that just it really went over the line. I mean, it's the first time, and I've been involved 23 years with, you know, I worked with the Philadelphia Eagles, who had some really tough fans there.
Exactly.
and crazy fans. And this is the first time I've ever been involved in sports in 23 years where a game had to be stopped, mm-hmm. because of actions of the fans in the stands. And that was tough.
I would think, you know, and that's kind of obviously, you know, the fire, the banner burning. I mean, you know, it creates a security issue, but
the field went on fire.
That's what I was going to say. Your point is well made, that when it interferes, you know, when it interferes with the play, and quite frankly, a field being on fire is just about the worst way you can interfere with play. yeah. That really does take it to the next level, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, and that's why I think there was this collective, holy cow, that this went too far. And, you know, even the group, you know, one of the groups sent us an email that basically they admitted that it was members of their group and that they themselves, you know, feel that it went over the line, that this wasn't representative of their entire group and so on. And it was unfortunate, but it happened. You know, it's not something we can say didn't happen and just kind of move on and say, oh, everything is going to be fine at BMO Field. It's, it really, you know, I'm just happy nobody got hurt. I mean, that was a scary situation. And one of these, there was a, I don't know what it was, an M80 or whatever, but there was a huge explosion that, you know, thank God nobody got hurt. And it was just, it was a scary situation to watch it.
It's been a difficult year for Toronto FC, to say the least. I mean, beyond that great run in the Champions League, but certainly, certainly in terms of MLS, it certainly hasn't gone the way people have anticipated. What's been the reaction to, do you think, from Toronto FC fans to the difficult MLS season? Have fans kind of taken a logical view of this, Bill, and said, you know, there are some pretty, I mean, not to make excuses for anybody, but there's some pretty well-documented reasons why this team would have difficulty this year?
Yeah, I you know, there's almost a sense, you know, I find amongst the fans I speak to is of disbelief, right? Because, you know, you literally look at, you know, 2.5, 3 months ago, we were, you know, on top of the world, right? And meaning, you know, we're making this run in Champions League, we're in the finals, and, you know, we lost out on PKs, but, you know, this is a team for the ages, right? Mm-hmm. And injuries caught up with us, and the guys who got the bulk of the playing time weren't, didn't perform well enough, you know, at the end of the day. And we find ourselves in an incredibly deep hole. I think it's going to be very difficult, but, you know, the one thing is we always feel is when we have our best players on the field, we're the best team in the league. And we're now getting to a place, I just joked with Greg Vanny yesterday, I saw the injury report, and there's literally, you know, two players that are within 10 days of being back and one who's 50-50, whereas, you know, a month ago there was 9, 10, 11 players unavailable. And it was very difficult, really difficult stretch for this team after what we've done the last couple of years.
I do want to shift focus a little bit and get your reaction to Alphonso Davies and the transfer news. Just in a general sense, not to get specific about it, but here it appears, Bill, as if we're going to have a young Canadian player, you know, and I said backstory aside, just a young Canadian player going over with one of the game's real, you know, real elite outfits. I think we look at the relationship between MLS and other leagues a lot of times, and we just kind of view it as being a one-way street. You know, the MLS is a league where a lot of guys come for one last paycheck, or, you know, maybe just because they like the lifestyle change. But now we're seeing a guy who, you know, cut his teeth in the Canadian program, cut his teeth in MLS, go over to Europe. Like, it's great. I know you want to keep your local talent at home and all that, but this says a lot, doesn't it, about what MLS has become?
Yeah, I think it's a massive statement for our league. What I'm most proud of, and their owner Greg Caput and Bob Lanaduzzi, their president, is they didn't just give him away. You know, this is not a kid they gave away for a few million dollars. They got to a point. I mean, that's serious money. Mm-hmm. That they're talking about, and that's could be, you know, really set their club up and how they're going to approach the designated player market, you know, going forward with this additional infusion of cash that's coming to the club. And so I'm really happy that they got to a point where people around the world, I mean, it's going to be the largest transfer fee in the history of MLS. That's serious. And now you have this young player who, you know, came, you know, he played a year in their academy. Then they brought him to their USL team where he did well. The last couple of years in MLS, he's done well. He scored goals for the Canadian national team. And this is a kid you can, you know, you look forward to the 2026 World Cup, which is going to be, you know, here on Canadian soil. And, you know, this is a kid who's going to be the leader of that team. And so I'm proud of the Whitecaps for not giving him away and really getting a very strong value for this exciting young player. And I think it shows young Canadians and young Americans down in the States that you can start in this league and do really well, and maybe one of the best clubs in the world, in Bayern Munich, who's an elite club, comes calling. And then the team, like they do everywhere else, can make a decision whether they want to sell that player or not. And, you know, in Vancouver's case, they got a very, I think, a very strong transfer fee.
Is there a trickle down effect with these transfer fees, or is it something, you know, specific to the player? In other words, just because Alphonso Davies got this, I mean, I'm just going to, let's say player X comes along, he's 23 years old and a European team wants him. Does this set the bar a little higher for the transfer fees, or is that sort of a player specific situation?
I think it's player specific, Jeff, but I think what this kind of says to the world is that, you know, MLS in particular has made big investments in our academy system, our development system over the last 5 or 6 years. And I know with TFC's, you're just starting to see the tip of the iceberg with some of these kids coming up into our first and second team. And now, you know, Vancouver said, you know, we're not going to give a player away. Bayern Munich, you're going to have to pay what you would for a player from Argentina or a player from Brazil. And it does set the bar a bit on what we're willing to do for a strong, young, exciting player who, look, he could have been part of the Whitecaps for the next 3-4 years. But now I think, you know, it's up to their club what they want to do with that infusion of capital. But I do think it sets the bar and says we're not going to give players away, which I'll tell you, sometimes we got an offer from a team from Germany for one of our young players who's a youth Canadian national team player, and we rejected it. And, you know, they were like, what do you mean you're rejecting this? We're like, you know, we value this player way more than you do. And so I applaud Vancouver for doing a good job on that negotiation.